You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. This is Trumpet Radio Live special, July 4th edition. Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondeau, we're here doing this. This isn't a fake.
Right.
We showed up today.
Yeah, this is Independence Day edition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were trying to decide if we were going to have sparklers in the studio or firecrackers or whatever else. But then we decided none of it. That would be a disaster.
Yeah, as much as we're dedicated to the show, losing our lives for the July 4th edition wouldn't be worth it.
Wouldn't be worth it, nor blowing up the station itself. Some of the interesting stats about the 4th of July. Of course, fireworks are sold, and there are a lot of them. Americans are going to spend $800 million on fireworks this 4th of July. And it's all in Logan County, which is here where we're broadcasting from.
That's where I realized last night, Logan County is a land of infinite fireworks and no sleep.
Yeah, that's right. Those things are going off late into the evening. So lots of fireworks here. And, of course, I think you can't buy them at the county over. So they're all right here. And you come to the county line and it's fireworks on top of fireworks. So pretty interesting. We bought some on Friday. Not a lot, just a little bit. And the guy in front of us, he spent $600 on fireworks. So he was festive. He had a big box. We don't know what was in that box, but there was a lot. Or one really big firework. I'm not sure which it was.
Yeah, it's well, in Canada, fireworks aren't a big deal. I think I'm not even sure if they're legal. I've never even seen any to buy, and I think it's illegal to light them in private places. I think too, because of bylaws. So I've never seen them like around so much. But coming here, it's like it's like they can afford fireworks, but they can't afford like anything else, and it's amazing. I mean, it's pretty neat, except when you're trying to sleep, but it is pretty neat to be able to go and see fireworks everywhere for miles around.
There are pretty good shows, even just neighborhoods, people putting up the fireworks. So more is spent this year. Last year, Americans spent about $755 million on fireworks, and that's a 180% increase from 1998. Only $284 million was spent. In some cases, I think that's because certain counties in the U.S. have opened up sales where they didn't have it before. So when I was a kid, we couldn't, I don't know. I guess we could buy a few things, but it seemed like most everything was like a show. You know, people would go watch one particular show as opposed to just them going up everywhere. So anyway, but it's kind of interesting. There was one year, I remember, I forget where it was. It was not here, but it was somewhere in the U.S., Everyone in town was excited about the big fireworks show, and they all showed up for it, and it all blew up at once. And it didn't. It was just an explosion. And then it was like, "Well, see you next year." Sorry about that. So that would be very disappointing. It's pretty neat. It's pretty neat. They have some good shows around here, and always kind of fun to see those fireworks go off. So one of the interesting things about the 4th of July here in the U.S., of course, we have a lot of listeners around the country and then even internationally online at kpcg.fm. And they're not doing the exact same thing today, but here in the States they are. Abe, they had a game last night, a baseball game. I think it was last night it was at, I think, Fort Bragg. They played a Major League Baseball game. And, you know, something special for the troops. And so pretty exciting. A little bit of controversy, though, because you're only supposed to get in if you were a service member, or I guess they could bring some people, too. And this guy that goes around and he collects baseballs. He got a baseball from every stadium. So he got into the game, and he tweeted pictures of himself with the baseballs that he got, and they've got the special, like, you know, commemoration information on the balls. And so he was going to pay $1,000 to anybody that would give him a ticket. But then it turned out that his friend, who is in the military, was going to take his girlfriend, but she didn't want to go, so he ended up giving him the ticket. So a little bit of back and forth there. Should he have been in there? Should he have done all this? And I don't quite know what all the controversy is. I'm like, well, if he got the ticket fair and square, I mean, meh, I don't know. It doesn't necessarily bother me, but some people seem to be upset by it.
Yeah, I saw some videos and pictures on Twitter of that. And I don't know. I think if the guys are willing to work that hard to get a baseball from every stadium, may as well give it to him. I mean,
it was a spare ticket. I mean, it's not like he was taking somebody else's spot, as far as I know.
But yeah.
Anyway, interesting. Again, it just kind of shows the sometimes the danger of Twitter. You know, hey everyone, right. Look what I'm doing, and people are like, hey, we don't like what you're doing, and then you've got a Twitter war.
Yeah, or criminals who go on Facebook or Twitter and say what they've done, or and then the police find them like 5 minutes later.
Yeah, they post a picture of them, like a selfie of themselves from the phone that they just stole.
Right. Yeah,
and it's not hard to find you then. They can track that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one of the improper uses of social media. That's it's not smart for anyone.
Yeah, so it's always a that's always what happens with Twitter. It's kind of like, I mean, sometimes, you know, if you're using it like we try to use it here for the station, it's relevant information, I hope, for people that are interested. But sometimes people are just, you know, tweeting about themselves, which is fine. But it's always like, hey, look how great everything is. You don't see a lot of tweets like, oh boy, I really messed up, you know.
Right.
You don't see people tweeting that.
Well, I follow this political cartoonist in England, and he's pretty funny, but I noticed one day he was trying to work on some cartoons, and I guess he was working from home, and he had this long rant about how the kids next door were being loud, and he was just going on and on and making jokes about it. And so it was pretty funny. He was getting really frustrated though, because they were just being loud, and they're having like water gun fights outside in the yard. But those can be entertaining as well, seeing people's reaction to things. I mean, sometimes it goes too far, but it is some comic relief throughout the day.
Sometimes, yeah. There can be some humorous ones. I wonder what a guy like that says, go outside and tell the kids, like, hey, quiet down, I'm trying to draw cartoons.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I need complete silence to focus on these cartoons.
He kept threatening to pop their blow-up pool and or cause some other diversion to get them out of the yard.
That sounds like a whole new cartoon series. Like the guy trying to do cartoons, but he can't because the kids next door are always into mischief.
Yeah.
That's like a whole new series right there.
Yeah. It's like modern-day cartoonception, a cartoonist within a cartoon.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That blew my mind right there. It's like when you look at a mirror and there's a mirror behind you.
Right.
The infinite mirror. Yeah. It's July the 4th today. Here's some of the things that happened on this day in history. Yeah, the big thing that happened, 1776. The amended Declaration of Independence prepared by Thomas Jefferson was approved and signed by John Hancock, which of course gives you that famous saying, put your John Hancock on it, the president of the Continental Congress in America. And so we'll go through a few other things and then we'll talk a little bit more about some history of the 4th of July. A lot of things happened, though, on this day, of course. 1802, the U.S. Military Academy officially opened at West Point, New York, and then we did one we talked about the other day when they first started letting ladies in, which was not too long ago. But there's a long history there from West Point, 1802. 1803, the Louisiana Purchase was announced in newspapers. The property was purchased by the U.S. from France and for $15 million, or 3 cents an acre. That's a pretty good deal. It's hard to get property for 3 cents an acre today.
I think that's probably the best deal in world history, especially for real estate. I mean, has the Mississippi Valley, which is the best farmland in the entire world, and you got for 3 cents an acre. That's pretty good.
Pretty good deal. Pretty good value there. 1817, on this day, construction began on the Erie Canal to connect Lake Erie and the Hudson River. A lot of stuff, a lot of U.S. American events today. 1845, American writer Henry David Thoreau began his 2-year experiment in simple living at Walden Pond near Concord, Massachusetts. And, of course, he wrote about that. You know, what's interesting about that writing is that he was trying to get to, like, the meaning of life and just live simply and see what life is all about. And then they made a video game about it. There's a Walden Pond video game.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't think it's a lot of fun.
You're right.
But I didn't quite get the sense of it. They just said it was, you could kind of like go around. They like tried to recreate his little cabin there and you could do something. I don't know if it's like Oregon Trail or what, you know, that game where you'd have to try to survive.
Right.
But yeah, I was thinking, man, I don't think when he wrote that he was hoping they'd make a video game out of it. One, because there were no video games, so that would have been a wild thought. But it's exact opposite of what he was trying to do.
Right.
He's trying to simplify life, and so they made a video game about trying to simplify your life, which complicates your life.
Right. And maybe some people playing video games should consider the message of simplifying the life too. But
well, you got to be kind of sad if you're a kid and you're, that's the video game your parents give you.
Right.
Got your new video game. Oh, great. You know, what is it? And then, well, it's Walden Pond. What do you do? You try to survive.
Yeah, I always, I mean, I grew up without video games, but I understood enough about them that I knew what was a good video game, what was a bad. Usually, but just by the title, you know if it's going to be good or bad.
Yeah.
But I always felt bad for the kids who only got the educational ones. I mean, those are cool. I mean, they're useful, and some are really neat. But most of the time, it's pretty bad.
I had one time, and I played it a couple of, I don't know, 10, 15 times. I never figured out what it was.
Right.
Like, I didn't know what it was. Like, I had this character who could walk around, and he would, but I didn't know what he was supposed to do. I just never could figure it out.
Well, the very first computer I ever got was a Commodore 64, and it had two video games on it. One was the snake one, where you have to keep, you have the line, and it gets bigger every time you hit the little dot.
Uh-huh.
It had this other one where you're, it's all like very basic 2D, no just like color lines, no like solid colors. And you're walking through this big building, and you have to kick down doors and free prisoners. So I did that for a while until I realized it was impossible to win because it was a Commodore 64. Yeah, that was my early experience with video games, and I didn't think they were too great.
Yeah, everyone remembers Pong.
Right, yeah.
Pac-Man and the basics like that. And it's funny because arcades, you know, years ago, if you went to an arcade, there'd be a lot of different games there, and you could spend a fair bit of money. And now you can buy, like, all of those games for your phone for, like, you know, 90 cents.
Right, yeah.
And I just think, wow, if I was a kid, like, this would be paradise, but I don't care now. Although, I will say, I think there is a certain, excitement about going to an arcade.
Right.
And having the games there and playing. It's just kind of a different feeling than maybe it's because of the access. Maybe they're too easy to access now, so it's not as fun. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, because it was kind of this exclusive thing. It's like going to movies in a theater when I was younger. It was a big deal. Like, we only did it a couple times a year. It was like we specifically picked the movie that we thought was going to be really good. Nowadays, you can watch on the internet like a day before it hits the theater. Yeah. Stream everything on Netflix. So it is some things, because they were exclusive before, now you can get it anywhere.
Did you ever play Oregon Trail?
No, I didn't.
Okay. That was popular in grade school. It was sort of an educational game, I guess, so we could play it at school on the original floppy disks. It sounded like they were grinding something right. When it was running. And you were supposed to play it in a way where you tried to get all the way through the trail and do a good job. But we never did that. We always just, because you could choose how much food to eat and what pace to go at. And so we would just experiment with it. Like, no food, you're going to go at the fastest pace and you won't stop. Like, how long will you live?
Yeah.
Like, we would always, and then they would live like a lot longer than I anticipated.
Yeah.
But the goal was, and this is a sad thing, but the goal was always to try to kill them off as soon as possible so you could write something on the gravestone.
Right.
Because the next person that played it, there'd be a little window that pop up and say, oh, somebody died here. Do you want to read the gravestone? So the kids are always writing stuff on there. Just trying to be funny, or sometimes maybe not so funny. But
no, I take it back. I have played it before. I was on a scientific calculator, though.
What?
You can get video games for like a scientific calculator.
Really? I had no idea.
I don't know. I was pretty young, and I didn't know what the Oregon Trail was yet. Like, uh-huh. But I saw the game Oregon Trail. I used to play Mario on it all the time. It was my brother's scientific calculator, but I did play that because you have to choose the ford or river, how much food to forage, and
right.
All that stuff. Yeah,
you can go hunting.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you stand there with your little gun, and like a buffalo runs by really fast, and like, how was I supposed? I didn't even know it was coming. You just kind of just shoot and just, you know, see right. How it goes. But yeah, those are some of the games. Number Munchers, that was a big one. We had fun with that too. Some of the old time video games. But anyway. There's a Walden Pond one, too, so if you want to look that up, you really want to make your kids feel bad, get them the Walden Pond game, see how that goes. 1848 on this day in Washington, D.C., the cornerstone for the Washington Monument was laid, which those are some pretty neat monuments out there in D.C. 1855 on this day, the first edition of Leaves of Grass by Walt Whitman was published in Brooklyn, New York. 1863 on this day, the Confederate town of Vicksburg surrendered to General Ulysses S. Grant. So it's amazing how many just, you know, fairly big American events there are on this day. So it's kind of cool to see. 1884, bullfighting was introduced in the U.S. in Dodge City, Kansas. That would have been exciting, the first bullfight. 1886, the first rodeo in America was held at Prescott, Arizona. You ever been to a rodeo?
Yes, I have.
We have a rodeo just down the road here that they do sometimes.
Big Easy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the it's not that. It's,
oh, no, no, Big Easy is something completely different.
That's New Orleans, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Lazy E, I think.
Yes, yeah. The Lazy E.
There you go. But they probably have some rodeos down in the Big AC.
Right.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, I have not been to that one. I went to one in South Dakota when I was a teenager, and we were there for a trip, and we stopped at a rodeo. I got to say, it wasn't totally my thing, but I don't think I quite understood. Well, I didn't understand probably the scoring and all of that.
Right.
So it was okay, but I felt like I'd seen it, and it went on for quite some time. So it was an interesting experience.
Yeah, I went to the Calgary Stampede up there when I lived in Calgary. And that's the biggest outdoor show on earth. So they had rodeos, like chuck wagon races, like the different, like the cattle dogs. So they had everything you can imagine. So that was pretty neat seeing all that for the first time at many places. So that was cool.
1934 on this day. This just sounds funny, but at Mount Rushmore, George Washington's face was dedicated. So it's not often you get to dedicate someone's face.
Right. Yeah.
But that's pretty neat if you've been to Mount Rushmore. You know, we've all seen pictures of it. It's very famous. And then when you go there, you know, you're driving up to the park and you come around the corner and there it is. They're just all the big faces looking at you.
Right.
It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after about 5 minutes, you're like, all right, well, you can hike around. There's fun things to do there. But I just remember coming around the curve and just seeing it. And it just kind of takes you back a little bit because you've seen it in pictures. And there it is.
Right.
In real life.
Yeah, for me, that would be the worst possible monument for my life because just the biggest possible scale of my face on a mountainside.
Oh, if they were to make one of you?
Yes. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I see. Yeah, that would be a little unnerving.
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt the same way, actually, just kind of awed when I was in Ireland and went and saw Trim Castle. Hadn't seen a castle before. So I came around the corner and there's a castle.
Right.
And it's just like, whoa, that's a castle, you know? And it's funny because you get a sense from the town people. They're just like, ah, that old building. Like,
yeah.
They see it all the time and they don't care about it. And they were actually going to tear it down and stuff. And it's like, it's a castle, though. But they see it all the time. So
yeah.
It's not as big of a deal to them as it was to me. We need more castles around here.
That's so right.
Build a few more of those. instead of the mini mansions, start building castles again. 1946 on this day, a big day for the Philippines as well. The Philippines achieved full independence for the first time in over 400 years. And so that was back in 1946. So I guess they have their independence as well on this day. 1955, if you are a snake lover, the first king cobra snakes born in captivity in the U.S. hatched at the Bronx Zoo in New York City. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
As long as they're in the zoo and behind the glass. And the 2009, the Statue of Liberty's crown reopened to visitors. It had been closed to the public since 2001. So they reopened that in 2009. With the time we have left, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the history of July the 4th.
Yeah, this is obviously Independence Day, most significant moment in American history because it was the first. It's when the Declaration of Independence was formally signed by the Continental Congress, thereby causing a big rift between Great Britain and the colonies, where they finally started to try to build their own nation. And it is interesting going through this history, especially in the context of modern America, because if we usually looking back on the history supplies us with lots of lessons to learn from. But also, if we look at the miraculous nature of this and the men who were involved, I think it's pretty humbling to look back and to take stock of how far we've come and how it started. Because it wasn't always a sure thing. In fact, it was probably the most poorly prosecuted war in a war of independence, but it went the best of any war of independence in history, because George Washington, he lost more battles than he won. The Continental Congress went bankrupt several times. the British conquer the capital, Philadelphia, very early on in the war. So things weren't looking good, but I think it's a tribute to the American spirit that that it continued into the men who fought there. And
it is interesting when you do read some of that history, because there is, it's easy to kind of have this idea like everything went great and it was perfect, and, you know, just, but it was difficult. And as you said, a lot of battles were lost, and the U.S. fighting force was not this, you know, ferocious, well-equipped, well-trained group. It was kind of ragtag.
Yeah. There's on the Trump.com, there's an article by Gary Rutherford. He's a late, columnist at the Trump.com, and he did write about Valley Forge. And I think that's the story that really epitomizes the American Revolution, because the Americans were defeated, the American army, they went to Valley Forge, got worse there with the winter, lack of equipment, no money, no food, but they were able to make a surprise attack on Trenton the next, I think it was New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve, I think it was Christmas Eve, and really turned the tide of the whole war. But it's that moment at Valley Forge that Thomas Paine really lighted the souls of the men there, and he saw the great leadership of Washington, because he refused to let the army fall apart and for the cause to fail, because I think any other man would have eroded under those circumstances, and Washington was the man for the job, and I don't think anyone else could have done it. But I really, if you want to read more about that, I would really encourage you to read down the Trump.com, because it's just a great, it retells a story, and it really shows how miraculous that moment was in American history.
Yeah, that's a big part of it as well. It's just that divine intervention there that isn't talked about enough today. And you can read kind of the general flow of those things in the United States and Britain in Prophecy as well. Not as specific with some of the independence information, but it still gives you a general flow of information there. And it's really good to see that that backstory. And that's something, and you brought that out, I think it was a week or two ago, you had a write-up about the UK and the fact that, you know, in World War II, which isn't that long ago, they actually had a day of, you know, prayer and fasting. And in our country's history, Abraham Lincoln, he called the day of prayer and fasting as well during the Civil War. Today, you couldn't even bring that up without a firestorm.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's a famous painting of Washington kneeling in the snow praying. And there's a story. Some of these are legends. They have become legends. But I think this one's true, and a lot of people attest to it. Where at Valley Forge, some of his officers were looking for Washington because he disappeared. And they found him in the forest praying. And I think it's... And if you look at American history, like you mentioned with Lincoln, at almost all the big climaxes where the life of the nation hung in the balance, usually the leader did get on his knees and pray. Because they, like they said, many of them said there was nowhere else to go except to their knees. And I think if we step back and remember that, we can see why the tide of the war turned, why all the odds were beaten, and why there is an America. And if you look at the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, all the different documents of the Founding Fathers, I mean, there's no way you can divorce the law and the American idea away from God, because those go hand in hand. And especially this history of fighting against the world's greatest superpower at the time, Great Britain, and winning. It's this amazing testament to what America should be today.
1776, the... amended Declaration of Independence prepared by Thomas Jefferson was approved and signed by John Hancock. And that's the big event that happened on this day in history, July the 4th. And now today we can spend $800 million on fireworks.
Right.
So I like fireworks. It's a lot of money, though. Make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up here in a bit on KPCG, as well as the Key of David program. Also, Just the Best Literature today, a new one. Dealing with Shakespeare and actually interviewing some Shakespearean actors. Dennis Leap does that on the Just the Best Literature program, and Music for Life as well coming your way later today. Lots of great programming here on KPCG. Thanks for spending your day with us at 101.3 and also online at kpcg.fm and a live link at thetrumpet.com. This is Trumpet Radio Live. Dwight Falk, Abraham Blondeau. That'll do it for us today. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.